What was that? I heard something.
Yeah, it was me breathing in your ear.
No, really, I heard something.
Did you hear what happened at March College?
Hi, Raddick.
Hi.
Oh, what happened at March College? Another football recruiting scandal?
No, better. A mass murderer. Two kids were snuffed while parking at the lake.
Oh, how horrible.
I know.
That was great. What a
story. Yeah, we were great, weren't we? Wild man.
Hi. Are you drinking?
Oh, let's drink Irish whiskey at the end of the term. Would you care to join me in the celebration?
Oh. Well, that's terrible. How can you drink that?
Don't you go lock your door.
What could happen to me?
Famous last words. There's a murderer killing people around campus. You should want to know about it.
Hi, this is Lauren Marie Taylor from Friday the 13th Part 2 and Girls Night Out. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 128. And this time we're all going to be scoring an F as we sit our final exam. This is a choice by actually overwhelming demand by our dear listeners, who we asked if you wanted to choose a film that we hadn't covered. And this is one of the from the golden age, the golden year of 1981. Yes, we're all going back to college. And we're also joined by a special tutor and a special guest, Michael J. Ferrari, a.k.a. Meep, from the Retro Movie Love podcast. Good to have you with us, Meep. How are you doing?
Thank you. Hey, gentlemen. I'm doing good. Excellent. Happy Go Topless Day.
Is that what it is?
Apparently it is, yeah. In support of women's equality today, I'm going topless. How about you guys?
Oh, well, Eric's always going bottomless, aren't you, Eric?
Well, I am topless again today, as always.
Oh, okay. Well, now we know. We'll let our nipples fly free, as the lady does in Final Exam, and actually most slasher movies. But it is something like 3 a.m., isn't it? Or 10 minutes past 3 in the morning?
It's either pretty late or pretty early where I am right now. So I'm not sure exactly what, but I'm enjoying being here. Thank you for having me.
No, well, thank you. It was always a pleasure to have you on the show. And it's, that shows some mettle to be up this early or stay up this late. So thank you for coming along, Meep. We're looking forward to chatting with you about Final Exam. Eric, how are you doing?
I am wonderful, and I'm brilliant, just like Radish. Okay. I can't believe I said that.
Oh, Eric. Right. Joseph, how
are
you?
But I am brilliant. And like.
Yeah, anyway, we've moved on, Eric. Joseph, how are you
doing? No, you have to agree with me.
Anyway, Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. Looking forward to speaking some radish a little bit later. How about you? I know you prefer rhubarb rather than radish, Nathan, but apart from that, are you okay?
Well, both are fine, so it's okay.
I don't actually like radishes that much, I must admit. It's one of the few.
I don't like either.
Do you not? Well, it's controversial.
I don't like radish or rhubarb.
God. What? And this is the scintillating type of conversation that keeps people coming.
What's your stance on radishes?
I love radishes and I love rhubarb, so I'm all for it.
Okay.
Radish forever.
Radish forever.
He's the Nathan of vegetables. He just likes everything.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, in time-honored tradition, before we get onto the main feature, let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching recently. So, Meep, what have you been? What's been tickling your eyeballs?
Sadly, not a lot. I've been kind of busy with my own podcast coming out soon, so I have I've been watching a lot of movies for that. I have a horror podcast that I'm recording, so I'll talk about those probably on my next episode. But I'll talk about some other things that I've been watching. I got the Invasion of the Body Snatchers Blu-ray from Scream Factory. Did you guys pick that up yet?
Not yet. No, Arrow.
No, I have the Region 2 version.
I think it was that maybe MGM put it out or someone like that or Fox, but the Scream Factory disc is pretty great. There's a lot of great interviews on there, and the print looks really good, so I'm really happy with it. I'm glad I have that movie. I love that movie. It's a great remake not many great remakes, but that's a really good one. I haven't seen a lot. I saw, going back a little bit, Lights Out in the theater. I think you guys might have mentioned that before in the podcast. And I really enjoyed Lights Out. It's not a great movie, but it was kind of a solid, like, go to the theater and, you know, for 80 minutes, a really short movie. And I had a fun time with it. And then I rented Southbound, the horror anthology. Did you guys see Southbound?
No, we talked about it last time. Just say it was after watching Holidays. It was another film I saw in the in our, well, HMV, our kind of local kind of sort of, you know, where you could buy DVDs and Blu-rays, and I had it in there. It reminded me, and I looked to see if it was on Netflix or Amazon Prime, and it wasn't yet, but yeah, it's a film I've heard some good things about.
Yeah, it's out on DVD only here. I, for some reason, didn't get a Blu-ray release, but it starts off really strong, and I was like really into it for the first few minutes, and then I guess with each story, my my dashes were hoped a little bit, because I think with each story, it kind of gets lessened and less scary. But the first, like, the setup and the first story are so strong and really creepy. I was kind of disappointed as it went along, it got worse and worse for me. But I would recommend it just because of that first part of the movie so strong, and there's some really good effects in it. I was kind of creeped out by it, but then just keep your expectations a little bit in check as it does kind of fall apart a bit. I'm not a big fan of movies that kind of have to always go to dark places towards the end and just to like mess with your mind. And I don't know, I just kept kind of repeating that a bit. I wanted it to be a little bit more, as a horror anthology, I kind of wanted to try a bit different things as it went along, but I think kept feeling like it was going to be the same thing over and over. I was a little disappointed by that. But, other than that, not really horror related, but kind of sorta, I watched Teen Wolf with my kids. We had like a family movie night. They wanted a picnic in front of the TV and watch something. So I thought Teen Wolf was kind of appropriate. And I didn't realize it was a PJ movie full of sex and pot smoking, but that's okay. They enjoyed it. It's been a long time for me, and I kind of found the movie to be a little bit – I watched it a lot as a kid, but it was a little bit – not a little bit boring. I wanted it to be a little bit more exciting. There's some really good sequences in it. I thought Michael J. Fox, who I love, kind of was a little bit more reserved in it. There wasn't a lot of Michael J. Foxisms in it, which I was kind of surprised. There's only maybe one or two moments where you see Michael J. Fox doing his thing, because I loved him as Alex B. Keaton on Family Ties, one of my favorite shows ever. And he was great, of course, as Marty McFly and Secret Max Success and so on. But for some reason, he's not quite himself in that movie. I think it was like his first starring role, so there was a lot of pressure put on him. But I kind of enjoy the sequel a little bit more these days. There's this really good song in the original Teen Wolf that I love, Win in the End. And I feel like that song, maybe watching it as a kid, maybe made me more excited about the movie than I am now. So I have to maybe watch Teen Wolf 2 again to see if that holds up for me as well. I thought that was pretty fun. And other than that, can we talk about Vestron? Have you guys talked about that?
What about
the label? No, we didn't. No.
The label?
No.
All these new Vestron announcements. I'm so excited about them. Can't believe Vestron's back.
Yeah, what are they bringing out then?
They're bringing out Waxwork as a double feature. And was it Chopping Mall? Which you guys covered, of course. Yes. And they're just going to – they're testing – I've got two or three titles. I think Blood Diner is the third one. And to see if they do well. If they do well, they're going to continue putting out – a bunch of stuff that was released through Vestron on VHS.
Ooh, I hope they release Trick or Treats.
That would,
of course,
that
would you do.
I like that movie.
That was a movie.
Yes, that was a movie. Well, it was barely a movie.
We should pick it around Halloween.
Well, why not?
We still have a few Halloween sequels to cover, I think.
That's true.
Oh, no, we don't, do we? Yeah, we have.
Did we do Resurrection last time?
Did we
do that one?
Haven't we got Halloween 8 coming up? Haven't we?
Yeah, we did H2O. We haven't done Resurrection yet.
And that's got okay.
Sorry, Nathan. It's been
And that's got Tyra.
Well, that's okay.
And,
October is a whole month.
That is true.
Every day is Halloween, especially in LA. In LA, every day is Halloween. I've noticed living here.
Vestron seem to also be releasing Chud 2 and Return of the Living Dead 3 as well. From what I can see here. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very exciting too. Maybe not so much Chud 2, but Return of the Living Dead 3 and its unrated version would be a lot of fun to watch again.
And here's something that'll make Rhubarb Lady angry. I'm not really looking forward to Blood Diner.
Oh, I mean, it doesn't make me angry, but I feel like I was shocked already that you didn't like that movie. I feel like you talked about it in a recently seen a long time ago.
You said you didn't
like it. The only scene you said that you did kind of like was the topless aerobics because it was so ridiculous.
Oh, I love topless aerobics.
So that was the only part I think you said you really liked, sadly. That makes me sad.
I can't even remember anything about it, to be honest.
Clutching my rhubarb and crying now.
Then again, I am in my 40s now, so.
You are not.
I am.
It's difficult to believe, isn't it?
I know, very difficult to believe. But I am really sophisticated and stuff, so it should be obvious I'm in my 40s.
But I think we're looking forward to the Vestron releases. And one thing I was just going to mention, actually, that I thought I had to keep shtum about it, but two things we've done. We recorded the initiation commentary last week, which went, I think, really well, didn't it?
Yeah, we were brilliant.
Yes, we were brilliant. I mean,
fantastic.
So
probably the easiest editing I've ever done on any of our commentaries.
We had to remove the sound of a shelf crashing in the.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. There was like one dropout in that, and everything else was fine.
Excellent, and hopefully, well, we're going to see because I was approached by somebody who's putting out some new Blu-rays in the UK. It's a new label who's picking up. I think it's Sony catalog. They approached me about doing some special features for a brand new special edition of Happy Birthday to Me on Blu-ray.
Ooh. Wow.
Which one is that again?
It's the first one we did in the podcast, Derek. It's
What's the podcast?
You're on it.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Is this real life? Eric. So I'm going to work out, see what's going to happen with that. But they're very keen to do a special edition because all the other editions that have come out have either had the wrong soundtrack or just been bare bones. It'd be very exciting to get involved with that. But that probably won't be out. I think they've, I can't remember the company, but if you Google search it, they're putting out quite a few other Sony titles as well, just in the UK. I don't know if they're going to be multi-region or not, but... some more information on that as we get it. But if you listen to the podcast, you know I have a very soft spot for Happy Birthday to Me. So looking forward to talking about the epic slasher. But apart from that, let's move on to Joseph. What have you been watching?
Have you finished?
I don't know if you've finished. Have you finished?
Oh, that's it.
Yes.
I'm good.
Sorry.
See, Eric, I'm a professional.
Don't want any more rhubarb incidents.
Yes, I know. I'm a professional, Eric. Joseph, what have you been watching?
The only thing I've watched this week was a movie called The Last Heist. It's basically Die Hard in a bank with Henry Rollins as a serial killer standing in for John McClane. And this is a fantastic idea of these bad guys like getting picked off by a serial killer instead of some, you know, out down his luck police officer. Unfortunately, the idea doesn't hold up well the idea holds up well. It's just it's not done very well. It's really stilted and kind of, you know, permeated with stiff acting and just bad editing and just poor pacing. Now, Henry Rollins is really good in it as the serial killer. He has like this eyeball fetish where he just basically plucks people's eyeballs out. And, you know, it's really graphic and gory. But I don't know. It's just a solid premise that could have been done, you know, so much better. It was a huge disappointment. I'd give it like a marginal passing just as a one-time watch. But it's definitely not something I could say, hey, you know, this could be an instant classic. There's just definite room for improvement there.
Well, it reminds me of See No Evil. Didn't he kind of go around to bucking people's eyeballs out?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Has anyone else seen Last Heist?
No.
No. Yeah. Is it on
I've
Netflix?
Seen Last Heist on the left.
Oh, Eric.
It's a different film, is it?
Yeah, it's a different film. Oh, was that your joke of the week? Have you got a joke of the week for this one?
I don't have a joke of the week, but I'll just...
That you promised last time. You
promised. Yeah, you did promise our listeners.
Eric can just say this was his joke of the week.
Yeah, that was my joke of the week. There. Yeah, thank you, Nathan. Me and Nathan are two rhubarb sisters.
So, well, there you go. Anyway, sad trombone. Thank you. Thank you. Was there anything else, Joseph?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay. What about you, Nathan?
I was going to go see... Don't Breathe last night, but I kind of got sidetracked with work. So that's, maybe I'll go catch it at a matinee today.
That's the number one movie, isn't it, in the country? It was on Friday night anyway. It made $10 million
on its first night.
Yeah, so it's been quite surprising, you know, because...
I think its budget's like 10 or under maybe, so it's probably going to make its money back easily.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, well, thank you, Jesse.
I was actually really shocked that Wes said to me yesterday that he really wants to go see Don't Breathe, and he doesn't really like scary movies. Mm. And I was like, I can't believe you want to watch that. And he was like, yep. He goes, I really want to see it. And I was like, okay, well, obviously I do. So
it's also getting, you know, pretty stellar reviews around the critics and stuff. So. Who knows?
Well, hopefully we can talk about it next time because we're recording this a week in advance. Because again, we've got a few scheduling conflicts, Eric. But when we're back, hopefully we'll have a chance to see Don't Breathe. So we'll talk about that. But have you seen anything else, Nathan?
Anything? I started watching the Scream Show.
Oh yeah.
I've only seen the first episode so far, and I enjoyed the first episode, you know, well enough. I mean, I had watched the first couple episodes a long time ago, back when they first aired, and I wasn't that into it. But after Justin was talking about how, you know, it's, you know, all these fun chase scenes and that kind of thing, and I was like, well, that does sound good, so maybe I'll stick with it. And I liked the first episode a little more this time when I watched it. I really love the whole severed head being thrown into a hot tub gag. I thought that was kind of funny, but I'm looking forward to giving it, you know, a fair shot and watching some more of it.
Excellent. So you're starting from the beginning, are you? Starting from the first episode of the first season?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. The second season's got a really good Carrie gag in it, but I won't spoil it for you. Something to look forward to.
Awesome.
Yeah.
See that too.
Yeah. Oh, Eric's love beats.
Yikes.
Yep.
Yikes again. the only other thing I saw before Justin interrupts me is
and Eric, what have you been watching?
I rewatched Eyeball. Because as you guys I don't know if you guys remember, but I wasn't a huge fan of it when we watched it for the show.
I think I said that. That's madness.
Well, I mean, it must have been because I enjoyed it a lot more this time around. Maybe I just watched it in the right frame of mind this time around. I feel like the first time we watched it, I was maybe not quite expecting a cheesy film, so I was kind of in the mood for like a really good, serious, like, you know, giallo. But this time, you know, I went into it with the, you know, okay, this is going to be just fun, cheesy movie, and I enjoyed it like a lot more. So I've come around on Eyeball after rewatching it recently.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm glad you've joined the club. Meep, have you? I presume you've seen Eyeball.
I have seen Eyeball. Yeah, it's been a while, but I remember really enjoying it. Pretty over the top.
Yeah.
So.
fantastic. It's a film.
You were reenacting Eyeball, weren't you, recently, Justin?
In Barcelona, yes. Did I mention that in the last podcast? I can't remember. But we donned red raincoats on the Ramblas. And pretended to stab people. Not really pretend to stab people, because obviously we might get arrested. But
you looked suspicious behind a flower stall.
Exactly. Yes. So that was. I got a few funny looks, but we didn't get arrested. So anyway, that was all good. But I'm glad you enjoyed that, Nathan.
I really quite enjoy what you guys were saying before. How this vacation is so important. It doesn't matter. The people are getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to carry on with our trip.
Well, they've invested a lot of money in it, so...
That's true.
So fantastic. Anything else, Nathan?
No, that's it.
Okay, so you finished?
I am finished.
Thank you. Okay, well, let's safely now I move on to Eric. What have you been watching?
Okay. Well, I've only really watched the one film this week apart from Final Exam, and that is, it's not really horror, but it has some horror-related personnel attached to it. It's Reform School Girls, which was directed by Tom DeSimone, who did Hell Night. Hmm. And two of the bitchy girls in the... It's a women in prison movie, for all intents and purposes, even though it's a, quote, reform school. But it's got Darcy DeMoss, who is Joseph's girlfriend, from what I can remember. Mm-hmm. And she, of course, was in Friday the 13th, Part 6.
And you know who Tom's brother is, don't you?
Yes, Bob DeSimone from Friday the 13th, Part 5, which also starred Tiffany Helm as the breakdancing Violet. And she is in Reform School Girls as well as a big-haired sort of goth type girl. Somebody that Justin might have hung around with back in the day.
Could be.
Yeah.
And Darcy's also in Friday the 13th, Part 4 as well, right?
Is she one of the dancing girls on the television, is it?
That's right, she is, yes.
Yes, one of the aerobics girls that Axel is watching in the morgue.
Very popular workout video. My wife apparently had it as well.
You had it as well, I assume, then, yes?
my wife had a copy of it when she was younger. Yeah, very popular. It was fun. I watched it, too.
Excellent. So there's a bit of trivia. She's in two. And she auditioned for Friday the 13th, Part 5 as well and didn't get the role. I think it was for the big boobied lady in the woods role.
Yeah, apparently she was hit on by the director, like...
Yes.
In a very, very creepy manner. So she opted out or something like that.
So, yeah, the movie is lots of fun, but the standout role is Wendy O. Williams from The Plasmatics, who looks like, I suppose because it's a reform school, they're all supposed to be 18 and under, but she looks about 47 in the movie, and she has the most false-looking boobies I've ever seen. Not that I'm an expert, but she is totally badass, as they would say. Sadly, she is no longer with us, but I thought she was terrific in this film. It's utter trash, but that's a compliment. And Arrow will have it out on DVD, not on Blu-ray, just DVD only in the UK. No extras or anything, unfortunately, but a good movie. It's the women in prison equivalent of Hell Night. So what more can you want?
Yeah. I love it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've never seen
it. It's one of my favorite women in prison movies. Mm.
It's got a great... soundtrack too. The title song's a lot of fun too.
It's got Sybil Danning in it as well. Speaking of big boobies,
that sounds great. I need to catch up with that someday. I haven't seen it, so and I haven't seen Blood Diner either. So again, two movies. Maybe a double.
You haven't
bill.
Seen Blood Diner?
No. I mentioned that last time we talked about it. Actually, I said I'd watch it, and I never got. I don't have it. So
say a lot of things that you never. And he promises a lot of things, Justin, and it never happens.
What, like putting Toya at the end of the episodes?
Yeah, for starters.
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen.
But hey, Eric.
What?
What did you think of the scene at the end where she's driving the bus and busts out the windshield and stands on it?
Oh, that was awesome. It was total Arnold Schwarzenegger commando type thing. Yeah.
I love it.
I like the fact that she just wears pants and a bra all the time, regardless of what she's doing. Yeah. It's like she has no other wardrobe. Oh, and there's a poor little kitten in it as well.
God. I hated Edna so much for that scene.
Yes.
I was like, oh, I can't wait for somebody to just, like, you know, beat her up.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Eric. Anything else?
No, I watched Star Trek Generations as well.
Okay, well, that's not...
Do you want me to talk about Star Trek Generations?
No, thank you.
Okay.
No. Well, you can if you want, if anything exciting, but we're kind of slightly kind of anti-sci-fi on this show.
I don't think we're anti-sci-fi, are we?
Well, me and Nathan are, aren't we?
Do you not like sci-fi? I know Nathan doesn't. I didn't know you didn't.
Well, I'm not a big fan of it. I do. I don't go out of my way to watch sci-fi. I find it a bit mawkish, really, a lot of it. Especially
You're so close-minded.
Oh, I know. No, I don't
mind. You should broaden your horizons like me and be sophisticated and multicultural and shit.
I'll try that at some point, Eric. Yeah. But yeah, so I've got a cat on my lap who's biting my cables. So I could go quiet. Sorry.
Well, yeah.
What?
He's biting my cable.
My cable. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the microphone.
Cable junction, like a Jaws tube.
Oh, I love cable junction.
That could go very horribly wrong if so we suddenly hear a big cat meow and a bang, and then silence.
Oh yeah.
And things are going very wrong. So. But thank you, Eric. I'll just kind of talk very quickly about a couple of things I saw. Like Meep, I saw Lights Out at the cinema on Tuesday night, and I liked it well enough. There's some really good bits in it. I mean, it's kind of, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, Meep, when you said it's good for what it is, which is kind of like a Friday night kind of, Fright Fest, but it's certainly no new classic. It kind of reminded me a little bit kind of more like almost like a 90s director video horror movie with kind of, I think Maria Bello and stuff was kind of, the acting in it was pretty good for the most part. And I think it was kind of, not in a snobbish way, but it was almost, the acting kind of was almost too good for the source material, if that makes sense. Because there wasn't, because people know it's kind of the extension of a short 2-minute movie. And they just didn't really, it was pretty well put together, but it's very slight. There's not really, there's not much meat on the bones. But the other thing I thought was quite interesting, and it kind of made my heart sing a little bit, was before the film, every single trailer was for a upcoming horror movie, which kind of is always a good sign. So,
like what? Don't Breathe.
It was Don't Breathe, Blair Witch. There was one which was a big budgeted one, and I can't remember the name of it. It was something, it's like a girl's name. And it was kind of like a...
Morgan, maybe?
Morgan, yes, that was it. The one where it's got a lot of quite famous people in it, and it's Ridley Scott, is it?
Yes. And
it looks like...
What's it about?
Well, it looks like a really like cheesy... Sort of one of those kind of movies where they make a clone of a child and then starts killing people.
Oh,
but,
awesome!
But it's got like quite a lot of famous people in it, and it looks like they all get locked in some underground lab and get bumped off one by one. That's what the trailer makes it look like. I don't know whether or not it is, but it's got some very famous people in it, and I think it's either produced or directed by Ridley Scott. So. And I'm trying to think what the others were, but there was a couple
it's
of
It's directed by Luke Scott, which might be a relative.
Could be his son, couldn't it, or something? Mm. Yeah. But yeah, so there was that. The other thing I watched again, was The Fury, Brian De Palma's The Fury on the Arrow Blu-ray. And I kind of, it's a film that I have a mixed past with, in so much I like it, but I do think it's overlong. I think it could be cut down for a tighter running time, but I kind of always, I think I remember seeing it on TV when I was much younger, and there's kind of the whole the exploding body, which predates Scanners by 3 years at the beginning. Sorry, the very end of the movie, which was great. But have any of you caught up with Scanners and also Scanners The Fury recently?
Not really. Well, I have it, but I haven't watched it in a couple of years.
Mm. I've never seen it.
Have you not?
I don't think it's as good. It's not half as good as Carrie, I don't think.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just going to say. I could have done more horror element in it, maybe, than there actually is. A lot of it is conspiracy, political, claptrap. So I could have done more exploding people, I think, because I'm like sophisticated and shit.
What did you think, Meep? Are you a fan of The Fury?
I am. I'm a big fan of The Fury. I love The Fury. Actually, I think it could be even longer. We discussed The Fury on our Brian De Palma show, and for us, it's kind of it kind of falls into like that territory where it could be like a series, like almost like where the kids are being exploited by this evil guy played by John Cassavetes and using their powers for no good, and like kind of like in almost like an X-Men like or Harry Potter kind of franchise that we were daydreaming about turning it into a franchise. Something about The Fury for me with the characters, I get really invested in them. So that's why my mind goes to like making it into a franchise, making it about multiple kids with powers. And of course now kids with powers are very popular with the show like Stranger Things. was kind of envisioning like a Stranger Things like series with the Fury. I like the source material too. John Ferris wrote a good novel, and I don't know. I just really dig it. I like Kirk Douglas in the lead, and all the actors. Amy Irving, of course. Movies about telekinesis, bring them on. I love them. It's the one power I wish I had. I could dig watching movies about telekinesis all the time. So it's one of my favorite Brian De Palma's too. I think it's expertly made.
Yeah, I just wondered with it whether or not he wanted to make it, or he was kind of like he did Carrie, and they said, right, we'll let you make another movie if it's got telekinesis and teenagers in it. I don't know the history of the making of it and where it came from. Was it based on a book? Was it a?
It was based on a book by John Farris, who incidentally had wrote and directed a horror movie in the early 70s called Dear Dead Delilah. Mm. And I think I might have given you a poster of that, if I remember correctly.
Yes, you did. I still got that. Yes, because I watched
a while back.
I watched Dear Dead Delilah for the first time a few months ago. So it made me dig out the poster again. So. Yeah,
I like that movie.
That's a good.
So I think it was a novel that that Brian De Palma liked and wanted to make into a film, and I believe he had a deal with 20th Century Fox, so he made that. I think he made the film he wanted to make, and I think he's actually, if I remember correctly, he's proud of the film. So,
okay. It's cool. Okay, well, thank you very much. And but that's basically what I've been watching. So, without further ado, shall we head off to Lanier College? We all on board the terrorist bus?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Like an A, please.
Okay. All right. So here we go.
At Lanier College, they have the finest security, the best teacher-student relations, no fraternity hazing. Strictly enforced curfews.
Shh. What was that?
And a killer. He's come back. Final exam.
When are you going to realize that the whole world isn't made of psychopaths?
There's a murderer around campus killing people.
Some may pass the test. God help the rest.
Exam week at a small college campus is coming to a close. The isolation of the almost empty school is eerie and uncomfortable. At noon, an ominous black van quietly arrives on campus, and soon after, one by one, the students fall prey to the stealthy knife-wielding intruder. One pretty girl is destined for a most terrifying experience, trapped by the killer high above campus. A tense and often savage thriller with a stunning climax as the girl pits her wits and her courage against a psychotic killer. That's the back of the old Embassy video release, which I've got here, which I picked up the pre-cert, which on the front kind of has got the tagline, "Some may pass the test, God help the rest." And the video cover is actually of Cecil Baghdadi killing the killer and stabbing him to death, which is kind of one of the, it's kind of one of these curious things they used to do back in the early 80s, I think, with Communion and Alice Sweet Alice. The video I've got actually shows who the killer is on that, which is strange for a whodunit. But Final Exam was never a whodunit. It wasn't even a why done it. It was just he done it, basically. And I think, again, it's one of these films that I've probably reappraised since I first saw it, or when I first wrote about it for Hysteria Lives, if indeed I did. I can't remember. I presume I reviewed it. Because it is, it's unashamedly a bit of a Halloween clone, right down to the music. And actually, here's a little bit of music that I kind of picked out, and it's kind of, here it is. ¶¶ I mean, it couldn't be more John Carpenter-esque if it tried. Having said that, on its own kind of fairly kind of meager terms, its own meager terms, Final Exam is a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with it, catching up again this time. In fact, actually, the Halloweenisms kind of a joy to watch. The cast is very likable. Again, even the kind of the asshole jocks are kind of they don't grate too much. Even Wild Man, who is kind of someone that I kind of, when I was that age, I would have hated to be stuck around, but he's a fun character on screen. The killer, I think, is, if I've got a major bugbear with the film, it's just how it could have been different if the killer had been sort of different. So my cat's just done a massive great fart sat on my lap. Sorry, excuse that for the professional thing. But anyway, the
disgusting.
I know it's disgusting. Oof. But anyway, I'll see if I can press on like the professional I am. But yeah, the killer, I don't have a problem actually with the killer having no motive at all. In fact, it kind of fits in quite nicely with the Radish's kind of whole idea of the kind of random nature of violence and its place in society in the early 1980s. What I do have a problem with a little bit is the fact is that he's just, in some scenes, he just looks like a roadie going to do a sound check. Especially like at the end when he's walking up the stairs with all the kind of impetus of literally like a roadie going, going to set up for Status Quo or something. And so that kind of, that I find is a shame. And I do wonder if they'd gone that little extra mile of ripping off Halloween. I mean, they've got all the shots like Cecil Baghdadi looking out of the window and seeing him down in the trees and him standing to view and the van prowling around campus, all of the things that are kind of blatantly ripped off from Halloween, but of course work perfectly well here. But if they'd actually got him in a mask and so made him a complete cipher, a complete unknown quantity, and you never found out who he was or what he was doing, I think I might have, it might have worked a bit better. But having said that, it's an awful lot to enjoy with Final Exam. It could be a little bit talky for some people. There's a lot of character development in it, which is one of the, we'll probably talk about a little bit later, what the director's kind of vision, inverted commas, apart from ripping off Halloween, was to do a more character-driven film. And I think the cast talk about that on some of the DVD interviews that have been put out over the time. But I was never bored by it. I think it was a good, fun film. You can tell they had a blast making it. So, that's my tuppence at the moment. But as our guest today, Meatball, you were very keen to come on this episode, weren't you? So I'm taking it you either love or loathe Final Exam, and I imagine it's probably the former.
Sheriff, this is Lanier College calling. There's been a multiple shooting on the campus quadrant. Sir, listen, several students have been shot, kidnapped in a brown van. You better get out here. It's happening. The psychopaths are here. I love this movie, of course.
Bravo.
Oh, bravo, yes.
I like to view this movie as basically Animal House meets Halloween on a college campus. That's the best way to look at it, because for like maybe the first, like there's a prologue where somebody gets, people get bumped off, and then maybe 50 minutes later, the next batch of people start getting bumped off. So there's a big, long stretch where there's like, kids are just talking and just being wild teenagers. There's the John Belushi type character with Wild Man, who I love. If you look at the Blu-ray, you can see all the hairspray in his hair, which is a great little detail that Blu-rays bring out. He's this kind of slob character who just kind of annoys everybody, just cares for himself and kind of sets up as a good adversary for our hero, Radish, our quote-unquote hero, who is this character that I love in a slasher movie that is the person who knows what's going on, but no one else believes him. It's kind of the boy who cried wolf. And I love when a boy who cried wolf character shows up in a movie, and you get this form of a movie nerd as well with Radish, who loves horror movies, loves mysteries, and now he's the character who kind of you side with for a while, as well as Courtney, who is ostensibly the final girl in this movie. You kind of want them to come together to solve the mystery and defeat the killer. It doesn't go exactly that way, which bums me out every time I see this movie because I am so invested in these two characters. But I do love Radish. I think he's funny. I love all his lines. I love his little asides in the movie, like saying, "I'd like an A, please." Like he's such a kind of I won't say he's kind of fussy. Yes, he's kind of bitchy. he's very campy, which is interesting for a character in a leading male character in a slasher movie. Usually, it's kind of the typical jock guy who's paired with the final girl who have to solve the mystery. But in this case, he's not quite that male jock kind of character. He's the opposite of that. And I like the pairing. It's just different for the time period. And the movie just, you know, there is this lulls in the movie, but I just like that you just get invested in the characters and just make it so different for the time. It's like, this is a full-on campus caper before it becomes a slasher movie, which I love. There's people getting shut up in an elaborate ruse that we're not sure what's going on until we find out later that it's just a huge cover-up to for someone to cheat on a test. What an elaborate prank in this movie. I think I mentioned somewhere else that there was another slasher movie at the time called The Dawn of the Drip Blood, which was known as Pranks. This movie should have been called Pranks because the elaborate prank in the movie kind of sets you up for one thing and then becomes something else. It's just a silly movie, and then mixed with a guy walking around campus slashing people. You have the Playboy professor. You have the girls who are going on about their men, guys with incredibly bad haircuts in this movie. I think every guy in this movie kind of has a bad haircut. It's kind of interesting to watch. I love the fashions of the early 80s, and this movie gets like 1980, 1981 to perfection. It doesn't really have a late 70s feel because of the fashions with all the bell bottoms and like the styles you would see in, like, say, John Carpenter's Halloween. You have a very 80s campus movie, which I love. I love teen movies. And so blending of teen movies with slasher movies is, like, to me, the perfect combination. And at the center of it, Radish and Courtney. A big fan of this movie.
Excellent. Well, I thought you might be, so no, that was a very good summary. Thank you of your thoughts. Thank you, Meep. I'm sure we'll hear a bit more from you shortly. But Joseph, what about you? Are you a fan of Final Exam, or do you give it an F?
I give it a B minus. This is a movie I remember not liking at all, but you know, I watched it this week. It's a lot better than I remembered. I love the scene where Wild Man is killed by the killer. I just think it just shows him no mercy whatsoever. I mean, as a killer should in these types of films. But I love that the basketball home court light comes on, and it's got the 2-minute timer. And then by the time he's done killing, Wild Man, it's counted down to zero. I thought that was an interesting touch. I do like all the characters, even the more obnoxious ones like Wild Man. I think they're a hoot. Beetroot or Radish or whatever you want to call him. I like him, but I think he's one of those, I don't know, I think they could have scaled him back a little bit. He kind of, I don't know, something about him kind of bugs me. I kind of like all the jock characters a little more because they're just so over the top. Him, he's just, it sounds like he's constantly complaining about something, and he starts to grate after a while. I mean, he's well-written. I'll give him that, but I don't know. That's just my two cents. The final girl I thought was kind of dull. I don't know. It's kind of weird in a film with so many, over the top weird characters. She's just so kind of bland. And until the final showdown with the killer, she doesn't really do much but kind of sit around staring off or talking to her friends.
She also plays solitaire, which is very important.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very exciting as well. I love the you can fake an act of terrorism on campus and not really get much in trouble. Today you'd be, locked up for life. Put on a no-fly list, whatever. I also agree with you, Justin, that I think they should have made the killer some kind of, put him under a mask or something, because he looks like a guy. I mean, he looks like just like a stuntman, without a mask on, and there's no real kind of There's no tension there. There's no who is this mysterious guy? It's just some dude with a really bad haircut going around killing people in a green army jacket. But I mean, overall, it's really, you know, aside from all the talky moments, it's pretty fast. It's really well shot. I noticed that. I was like, wow, this is really well shot, really well put together. You know, there's some actually, you know, good, albeit kind of cheap jack tension towards, you know, the latter half of the film with Courtney's the final girl's name, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Her getting chased around by the murderer and then that final showdown on the bell tower. You know, watching this, I was reminded a lot of, you know, Scream 2, which also referenced this film, but it reminded me a lot of the, original Scream 2 script before they made all the changes for, the theater release, like, the guy getting tied to the tree, like in the original Scream 2 script, it was, you know, Mickey got tied to the tree the same way. It's like almost like Kevin Williamson, you know, watched Final Exam and just like took the script, changed the names and titled it Scream 2 before they changed it. So it was kind of interesting watching all those parallels there, especially since he referenced Final Exam in his film. You know, overall, it's not perfect, you know, but for, you know, just some clone of Halloween, it's actually really quite good. So, yeah, I'll be generous. Give it a B+.
Okay, well, thank you. Oh, a little round of applause there from somebody. Eric, how about you?
Yeah, well, I have two copies of this on DVD, and I do indeed have the soundtrack album on vinyl as well, which should indicate
so to
you
I.
That
I'm, so do I.
It wasn't a download.
No, it wasn't a download.
Mm-hmm.
I have the vinyl album here, and I'm waiting here in front of the microphone. I do have it. That's it. Wrap
pictures or it didn't happen.
I will take a picture of it, and I'm topless as well, so you'll be sorry you asked for that picture.
I'm sorry already.
Yeah. So the BCI Eclipse one came out in, I think, 2008, and it was kind of a soft transfer, but it came out in a really, really good look. And I don't have the Blu-ray, but the second DVD release from Scorpion is really sharp and really, really nice. You know, it's light years away from the old VHS I saw back in the day. I mean, I don't quite understand why I like the film so much, because it's really slowly paced, as we were saying. It's quite light on story and incident and gory incident, but I do hold it in very high esteem. It's one I would package together with Graduation Day for some reason. They both have the same kind of vibe to me, although I think Final Exam is better because it feels more like a proper movie, if that's not too damning on Graduation Day. Because it, as Meep was saying, it takes time to establish characters, and it is more of a high school comedy drama hijinks movie for its first hour before the slasher element comes in. And it works quite well as that. The thing that it does, I suppose, that all 1981 slashers that we love do is that it does pile on the cliches. Now, they probably weren't cliches at the time they were making the film, but, I mean, you have all the stereotypical characters, the jock, the nerd, the studious girl who's obviously going to be the heroine, and the slutty girl who's sleeping with the professor, all that, blah, blah, blah. The only thing it's missing is that those gory Tom Savini-style special effects that people probably were expecting at the time, and it's probably the reason why Final Exam has a bad reputation among certain fans, general movie fans, but also horror movie fans. A lot of them tend not to like Final Exam, but I can kind of understand where they're coming from. I enjoy the meandering pace of the film. I like the fact that it takes its time, and I'm enjoying sort of watching the characters and all the silliness unfold. I mean, I love the, as Joseph was saying, the staged massacre. They have it, this terrorist massacre to distract the authorities while some guy cheats in an exam. It's quite ridiculous. I don't know how ridiculous it was in 1981, but it's like nowadays, as Joseph was saying, it was certainly not something you'd get away with. It's like post-Columbine, it's something that's in very poor taste. I think I read somewhere that they mentioned that this would a film that would never appear on television nowadays because of that scene, and it's quite integral to the plot as well, so it's not something they could remove. In terms of the characters, I like the final girl, Cecile Baghdadi, I have to say. I mean, I know you're saying she's a bit boring, she doesn't do much, but I mean, she's kind of the goody-two-shoes character, so there's not really much she can do with that. But I think she's... I love the scene where she finds Radish, you know, spoiler alert, when she finds Radish's dead body, and she's hoping initially that's just a prank. And I think that bit's really well acted. I love Ralph Brown as the obnoxious wild man. I think he's hilarious with his hair. I don't know, Justin, did you think he looked a bit like David Van Day or Mike from Bucks Fizz?
Yes, maybe a little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
a bit chubby.
He always reminded me of John Schneider from The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, so, I love his sort of obnoxious over-the-top jock who just goes around belching and covering himself in shaving cream, or is it whipped cream? I can't remember. It's whipped cream. He's going around with a can of, isn't it?
Anyway, he sprays deodorant in his mouth, doesn't he?
Yeah, I know, which is like, ew.
He's wild.
He certainly is. Wild man by name, wild man by nature. But my favorite character has to be, and I'm always going on about these background characters who really aren't important to the plot, but they steal the limelight from me, is the character of Elizabeth, who's played by Mary Ellen Withers. She has the role of the fast-talking sort of frumpy girl who pulls the underwear out of her arse crack in one scene.
Bill Withers' daughter.
It is Bill Withers' daughter, yeah.
Is it really? I don't know. I was just joking.
No, it's not Bill Withers' daughter.
A lovely day. Sorry.
Yeah. I love how she reacts to the terrorist attack earlier on in the movie. She runs up to Courtney, one of the girls, and she's an absolute motor mouth. She's like, did you see that? It was horrible. They shot at us. It was murder. Copeland murder and kidnapping. I almost got killed. Some other people were shot. Why are you laughing? What did you see? What happened?
Wow, that's like the Micro Machine Man.
Yeah. Yeah, but as I said, her...
Yeah, it could be the Micro Machine Man. He could make all these announcements every day on the podcast. Yay! Sorry.
He sounded a bit like Guy Smiley there.
Yeah, whoever that is.
He's the game show host from Sesame Street.
Oh, okay. I never watched Sesame Street, so.
What? Did you not have a childhood?
No, I'm just, I was watching these movies right here before, you know, and everyone else is watching Sesame Street, so there you go.
I still watch Sesame Street.
Eric, that explains a lot, actually.
Yeah, it does. That's because you're a mature, sophisticated man in your 40s.
I'm mature and sophisticated. Mm. Sophisticated.
Eric, did you mention the bit? I don't know if you mentioned the bit where Radish is on the phone and he's towards the end of the movie and he finds the guy in his locker. The way the guy's positioned, his ass is hanging out of the locker and he's like barely standing up. I thought that was funny.
As if he's inviting Radish in for a little.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. And you see his reflection in that mirror, the way they frame the shot. It's his ass sticking out of the locker.
I didn't notice that bit, I have to say. I did notice another ass incident, which, as I said, is Elizabeth's crowning glory, is where she's walking up the corridor looking for Janet and she pulls the underwear out from her arse. As if it was an outtake or something.
She has the most unflattering jeans ever.
Totally unflattering. Yeah.
Until Barb and Stranger Things, I mostly flattering jeans. God damn.
I don't know, Justin. I was watching an old episode of Gladiators, the TV show from the early 90s on Challenge TV, and Ulrika Johnson had the most unflattering trousers on as well. I mean, the waistline was up around her where her bra should be. Anyway, that's an aside.
That's a very strange aside. What was that? Just about unflattering
just
trousers.
Just talking about unflattering trousers.
Although I did think the guy who played, was it Matt or Michael, the jock?
Wildman?
No, the one that ended up with his arse hanging out of the...
What's his name? I can't remember.
I think his name is Mad in the movie, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But he had very tight chinos on, didn't he, throughout, which may be why his arse was sticking out at the...
Mark was his name.
Mark, that's the one. Mark, yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can remember that's one thing that I miss from those days. They used to have like lots of men with lots of tight trousers.
Oh, Justin.
Well, it's always...
You're just treating men as a piece of meat. It's absolutely disgusting attitude.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, moving on.
So, as I said, the film does feel kind of slight. I would agree with you that I would prefer the killer to have... a bit more to him than just, as Joseph says, it just feels like a stuntman walking around. He doesn't feel like he is any, there's no menace to him, I don't feel. So I would have preferred something a bit creepier for the killer. But, I do love the film. As I said, the characters are fun. It has a real nice 1981 feel. And even though it's not high on gore, it's still hugely entertaining. Pretty sure I liked this from the get-go because it's the kind of film I imagine I would have hated when I saw it first, but I didn't for some reason. I think it's because it's so 1981, even though it was made in 1980, but it just, it gets to that sort of goodwill
from me. So yeah, I would give it an A minus, maybe. No, a B plus, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, like me. I figured Eric would like it because there's a shot late in the movie, right after Radish gets killed, where Courtney's getting a drink, and then they pan over, and there's a vending machine. There's probably like a Kit Kat or something in there.
There were some Lay's crisps, and yeah. she gets a Pepsi, full fat. Yeah. I did like that scene, yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, my favorite moment in Final Exam is the vending machine.
It seems like we've recycled this joke. Before,
my favorite character in Final Exam is the vending machine.
Well, yeah. that's
I love the girl sleeping with the teacher thing, and she gets naked at the end. Wow, that girl has got a nice
rack.
Derriere, I'll say.
All right, okay. What about a rack?
I guess it's fine. I'm not much of a rack man like everybody else is. I'm more of a derriere person.
One thing I will say,
which is why I like the guy's ass sticking out of the locker.
You did bring it up.
Yeah.
You did. Yeah, we're getting very suspicious now.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice in the film is that Courtney tells a story to Janet, I think it is, about some girl who killed herself because of the pressures of trying to get into a sorority. And you would think that because she mentions that out of the blue, it would tie into maybe the killer's motivation, but that doesn't happen. I don't know if maybe we're meant to jump to that conclusion ourselves. I don't know if the film is that clever. But, I would have preferred a killer with... not that he doesn't need a motivation, but I would have preferred something a bit more sinister looking even. Yeah. But no, it's still a big thumbs up for me. Love it.
One more thing before you move on to Nathan. I thought what would have been interesting with this film, what would have been a nice twist. You know, at the very beginning where they faked that whole that kidnapping and the machine gun thing. I thought it would have been funny if the killer had lived. And at the very end, he goes to a different college. And he's like, oh, sorry, I missed the test. Can I get a makeup? I had to go kill some people. It's kind of a joke.
It would have, yes. Well, they couldn't really. Yeah. Well, they could have done a sequel to this, but as we'll talk about the end shortly. But Nathan, what are your thoughts on Final Exam? What mark would you give it if you were scoring
A plus?
Oh well, of course,
because it's fantastic in just about every possible conceivable way. I love the chase scene at the end, and I especially love that the killer hides in a big barrel because I mean, he must be psychic.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know what I mean? How does he know that she's going to be in that area?
It's all very iced.
So I'm like, you know, that was talent on that killer's part. And, I mean, otherwise, I mean, I agree with the positive stuff you guys have already said. And I don't want to rehash it because I'm like, our listeners will be like, we've already heard this. So I want to be like... one thing I will say is that I agree with Eric on – I love the fast-talking Elizabeth. Was that her name? She's one of my favorite characters in the movie too because I love her character. So
the killer is such a big guy. I know there's a scene where he comes down in the dumbwaiter. How did he get out of that? Because it looked like, you know, very small.
Yeah, dumbwaiters generally are quite small.
Yeah, how did he get in and how did he get out? That's the question on my mind for this movie.
But it's kind of like there was lots of things in there, wasn't it? Like with his kind of the killer kind of the girlfriend of the guy gets tied to the tree. I've forgotten her name, but when she goes looking for him, then she goes up. He's kind of left a trail up to this kind of, I don't know what it is, this kind of up some steps, and she goes up there, and then he turns the light off. But when she runs down, he's somewhere else and grabs her. And then there's all sorts of things. He's waiting in the car, isn't he, when Mark comes running out of the building and turns the lights on in the car. He's just kind of – he's in the right place at the right time throughout the whole
movie. It's very Jason Takes Manhattan.
One thing I think this movie could have used is a little more gore. There's a few, like, instances of, like, blood splatter, but it's relatively light in the red apartment. Yeah.
I've just noticed the scene where the guy's arse is sticking out of the locker now. I have it on in front of me here. And that's now my favorite scene in the movie. Because it is. It's ridiculous. It looks like it's Brett Anderson on stage and he's caught mid-arse wiggle.
Yes. You mean it ousts the vending machine for you?
Yeah, I think it's even better than the vending machine scene. Yeah.
Holy moly.
Well, one thing we do have to obviously... we danced around, but... Joel Rice as Radish, do you think he potentially was a friend of Dorothy?
Possibly.
I don't think there's a potential about it. Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah. I think it was, I mean, I really like him. And obviously what we've talked about Scream and clearly he was the the kind of inspiration, his character's inspiration for Randy in the Scream movies. On his wall, he's got the Toolbox Murders, isn't he? Which is obviously, a few other horror.
Corpse Grinders.
Murder is my beat.
Yes. I like his performance. I think he's great, but he does come across quite camp. Obviously, nothing wrong with that, but the burgeoning romance with him and the final girl, perhaps not the most believable.
No,
it's not one of cinema's greatest romances. It's not Gone
with
the Wind.
They felt more like brother and sister to me than potential lovers or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of
he's incredibly camp. Yes,
yeah.
What do you think of his acting? Sorry.
No, I think his acting is actually really, really really, really good. For I had kind of ups and downs with his character, but the guy's performance is actually really good.
Yeah, it's a shame he kind of died. I mean, I kind of guess for a spoiler for Scream, was it 2 that Randy died, wasn't it? Rather than 3, wasn't
it? Scream. Yeah.
Then he was, again, I kind of guess that was another nod to Final Exam, wasn't it? That the Randy character gets killed off. Because I think as Joel Rice says in the, there's on the Scorpion releasing DVD, which Eric's got, which I've also got, and I watched the interviews with Joel Rice and Cecile Baghdadi and Sherry Willis-Birch, who plays the ditzy girl in this. But he kind of says he wishes that his character had lived and it was a shame that he died. But it's kind of, it's a testament to a good character development that when you actually care enough about a character, you wanted them to live. So I think he, all in all,
you know,
did
what?
A really good job.
I really felt that way about Mistake and Home Sweet Home.
No, you
only,
did not.
Only you would.
Only you.
I'm not even joking. Like, I really don't understand the hate that character gets, and I felt bad when he died.
Well, that's because
where do you stand on the Mistake issue? Hmm.
Mistake? Oh my goodness. I'm pro Mistake. Yeah.
But would you?
I'm not alone.
Yeah, but yes, Nathan. And Meep, if you had a teenage mime turn up with an electric guitar and playing every jumping out of you like was it Kato from the Pink Panther movies, would that not annoy you?
Well, it would, but I feel like his whole family was insane.
Yes, but I think it might grate after a while, and they've had in that universe of Home Sweet Home universe, they probably had that happening to them all the time, haven't they?
Yes, for 10 years.
For 10 years, ever since he probably jumped out of his mother's vagina with a in pan stick and a little guitar, a ukulele or something.
He was talented.
Well, he wasn't really, was he?
He did magic.
Well, that was that. The hint was in his name, wasn't it? Mistake. But anyway,
see, they set him up for failure by naming him that.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. So, have we got anything else we'd like to say on a final exam before we move on to some backgrounds? Anything else we want to?
Is this one of these? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
One of you, go ahead.
One of you, go ahead.
3, 2, 1.
Oh my goodness. Come on. All right, Meep, you go next. What are you going to say?
Okay, thanks, Justin. Oh. Okay, I'll stop.
Okay.
Oh. forget it.
Oh, forget it. No, go.
I just want to reiterate some of the soundtrack. I thought the Halloween stuff was really good in the movie, but there's also some really pretty music that plays like on the campus. Especially in the beginning, there's a lot of pretty piano score, which I thought was an interesting setup for the movie, which lulls you into thinking it's like a peaceful kind of fun, pleasant, happy movie, which I liked. I liked the false sense of security that I got from that piano score music, and then of course the Halloween kind of music kind of kicks in a little bit later too, which is also fun. Mm. Is that piano score on your soundtrack LP?
I haven't listened to it for quite a while, but I imagine it is. And there's also a song on it called The Executioner's Song, which has music and lyrics. I don't remember where it is in the film, though.
Okay.
There's also a song on here called Sweet Young Girls.
There is.
And the Mighty House of Gamma.
Yeah.
And there's one that The Massacre, Courtney and Radish, The Chase, End Title. So, there's quite... I have to put it on because I've got a record player and I haven't listened to it.
Yes, there's Love Theme as well. Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Can I also say that I love vans in slasher movies?
Yeah.
Any time a van shows up in a movie in general, especially of this time period, I'm really happy. Like Friday the 13th Part 3, Scream 2.
Prom Night.
Randy from Scream 2 dies in a van, doesn't he? So it's interesting, the connection there, the van.
Does it work if it's a telephone van, like in Slumber Party Massacre?
Sure, yeah. Any kind of van.
Oh, don't be so stupid, Nathan. You're just being stupid now. Of course it doesn't.
I know, it's just ridiculous.
I like in the credits, you know, it shows all the characters. The character's name for the killer is just Killer.
Well, it's almost like you could almost say it's like a satire. Well, not a satire, but like a kind of on the you know, the burgeoning subgenre. Or not even satire,
Weird if you go around reading about this movie, everyone treats this movie like it's one of the worst ones out of the early 80s crop. But it's actually, you know, in my mind, it's one of the better made ones.
I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the bookends of Courtney in the Tower, I think it's a nice well structure there. Starts off with her reading in the tower, and then it ends with her in the tower, of course, under some more duress. But I like that little touch there.
Yes. And do you think, just kind of obviously, that we didn't mention the opening scene, which is the lovers in Lover's Lane being, which is, of course, the old... you know, Lover's Lane, you know, the killer with the hook, although he doesn't have a hook in this, but that idea of lovers being menaced, which was kind of being utilised in lots of movies, and it was kind of utilised as a film within a film in He Knows You're Alone, and obviously then Lover's Lane, the film in 1999.
And Body
Count. The killer, he went after them because he wanted their land out top.
Yeah.
One sugar dairy women.
But that was,
you know, it's funny thinking about the killer in this movie and how vastly different he is from the killer in the last movie we covered. Mm-hmm. He went from somebody that had a lot of personality to somebody who was just blank and silent.
Well, I think the killer in Slumber Party Massacre 2 had too much personality, in my opinion.
Yes.
Oh, I loved his dance. Like, I would want him to do a dance for me before he, like, drove. Like he did for Juliet Cummins.
Meep, what are your thoughts on Slumber Party Massacre 2?
Yeah, I'm curious.
I love it. It's a lot of fun. One of my favorite slasher sequels, probably, of the 80s, for sure. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, I like the killer. I mean, yeah, it's definitely, musician killer could get annoying. And possibly I thought that in the 80s, but I've since I've really warmed up to it. I think it's more one of the more fun sequels of the 80s.
Well, you both like Mistake, so that obviously tallies.
Meep. Yeah.
I've had Meep. I'm tired of Meep. I just want to make love to Eric.
Oh.
Well, maybe off air.
That was stupid, kid. Can't believe you said that.
I'll be there in a couple of hours, sweet cheeks.
Okay, sugar tits.
Oh, blimey. Okay. Anyway,
it's only going to take you a couple of hours to get to Ireland.
Yeah. It's just an hour boat ride.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that was Final Exam. We're going to talk a bit about background now. So, again, as our guest, Meep, have you got anything, any juicy details you want to regale us with?
Juicy details. Other than pointing out, like, some of the stuff in his room where we mentioned already the all the posters. I love all the skeletons and chains and handcuffs that are in his room.
Ooh,
can we talk about saucy. That? What is that potential plot there with Radish's room? I don't know. Who's he tying up to the wall in chains? I wonder. I love that I just love the person who did the art direction to this movie. I think that the person who did the art direction and set decoration should have won the Oscar that year based on that room alone.
Who did win the Oscar that year?
Sadly, it went to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh.
You know, the same thing for the composer, who I actually think is pretty good. The original score that year went to Vangelis. Little Vangelis, but I really...
Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, because a giant boulder is that much more interesting than that bedroom.
It should have went to Gary S. Scott, who I think is a terrific composer. He also did a TV show that both Eric and I like a lot. He did the music for Fame, the TV series. Yes. And then many episodes of 90210, which I also know you like. And let's not forget, he did Freddy's Nightmares. He did a bunch of those. He was a musical director of Cher at the Mirage. which is
something Justin likes. Justin loves Cher.
I do not. No, I'm not a big Cher fan, Eric.
But you're a friend of Dorothy, so I just assumed you'd love Cher.
No. Well, I don't. I mean, I don't mind her, but I don't. You know, it just sounds like a just like a elderly robot that's firing.
Find a way.
Yeah, it's not. It's not my. It's not my kind of a cup of tea. Put it that way.
He also did the 8-episode run of Behind the Music, VH1's Behind the Music, including the searing portrait of Andy Gibb. So with that music, he really moved me. Sherry, I think we mentioned Sherry Willis-Birch played Vivia in Killer Party. She's here as Janet. I like her a lot. Mm. I wish she was in a lot of movies. I don't know why she's only in 2 movies. It kind of bums me out.
I looked at pictures of her in Final Exam and in Killer Party, and she looks completely different in Killer Party. It's just the glasses, maybe. I don't know.
She does. She's much more glamorous in Final Exam, which is interesting. Yeah. And then she dresses down for Killer Party.
She's one of my favorite characters in Killer Party, I think.
She is my favorite in Killer Party. I love Vivia.
Love her. The director, Jimmy Houston, he's done a few things. I'm sure you guys will mention what he's done, but I kind of like that he wrote the screenplay for Running Scared from 1986. Have you guys seen that one?
I have, yeah. That's Gregory Hines and
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal, yeah.
That buddy cop movie. I really like that. And the movie was released, I believe, in New York. I know a lot of the internet says it was released initially in June of 1981, but I found that it actually opened in April in 1981 at a college campus, Brooklyn College. Which is interesting. It opened in a couple of venues in April 3rd of 1981. And so kids at college got to see Final Exam first before anyone else.
It opened in, I think it may have been like a little premiere because it opened in Texas on April the 17th, 1981, and then did like a regional rollout after that. So that ties in. Yeah, that's what Variety says. It moved to Cleveland on May the 29th, and then Chicago on June the 5th.
Moved it around. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That happened a lot in the early 80s. They just moved prints around. But I think the earliest that I could find was April 3rd in 1981 at Brooklyn College, which I have an affinity for because I went there briefly. But it also opened later. It had that June run. It also opened again in October of 1981. So it actually opened in New York like 3 times. Again in October of 1981. I remember it opening at the Cinerama, which is in Times Square. And it was, I think we're playing it as a double bill with Slaughter in San Francisco, which was a Chuck Norris movie. And that happened a lot in the early 80s. They would double bill slasher movies with chop-socky karate movies. And it played on several screens, of course. And it lasted only about a week in theaters in October of that year. So it didn't even make it to Halloween, sadly. And other than that, I mean, that's pretty much it. The location of Shelby, North Carolina, was the fictional setting of Eastbound and Down, that show. Does anyone remember that show, the HBO show?
No. Yeah, it's got the dude that's in Vice Principals, Danny McBride.
Danny McBride show, yeah. It was apparently set there, but they didn't actually film there. And also The Hunger Games partially filmed in Shelby, North Carolina, where this movie was set. So Shelby, Carolina, pretty big. That's all I got.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you, Meep. Nathan, what about you? Have you got any background for us?
No.
Thank you. Moving on. Are you finished? Have you finished your background, Nathan? I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah, you stop cutting me off.
Okay.
Oh, good Lord. Your bullying of me is like almost reaching Eric levels.
I know. Yeah, I do apologize for it, and I don't really. But moving on.
Help us, Meep. We're being bullied.
Oh. I think both Eric and Nathan need a safe space. Preferably,
yeah. I'll just hurl some rhubarb at you.
Yeah,
I think hug it out, guys.
Yeah, you need a safe space, preferably one that's soundproof. Joseph, what about you? Have you got any background?
Yeah, it was filmed in Shelby, North Carolina, at Earl Owensby's EO Studios, who also did House of Death. And this film has sort of a similar feel, in my opinion, at least the lenses used for the footage. It just kind
I
of
really agree with you.
Yeah. It feels like House of Death, even with the opening scene, you know, one's in a car, one's on the motorcycle. Aside from that, I think Meep has pretty much covered everything else. One thing I did notice was the key grip in the film. His name is Gene Poole.
Yes.
I thought that was funny.
And he plays the cafeteria worker as well, the one with the hipster beard. That's him.
Other than that, that's all I pretty much have.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. What about you, Eric?
Okay. Well, apparently the character Wildman was modeled on John Belushi in Animal House, which is kind of obvious when you look at it. The producers, as Joseph was saying, they formed a relationship with Earl Ownsby and used his facilities in Shelby, North Carolina. He also was a producer on Day of Judgment, which we've covered, a.k.a. Stormbringer, the absolute classic of the slasher genre. I think we did it on a double bill with Skullduggery, didn't we?
Wow, that was a show, right?
It was our double WTF double bill.
Yeah. We'd have a Hans Manship interview on that one, I think.
Yes.
Maybe I can't remember.
He also produced Dogs of Hell, aka Rottweiler, which I think was a 3D movie, was it, from the early 80s?
Yeah, that also starred Kurt Rector. Well, I don't know if it's Kurt Rector from House of Death was in Dogs of Hell.
Yeah. Radish mentions in the college lecture room, he sort of mentions glowingly The Massacre on the University of Texas Campus by Charles Whitman in 1966, which one review I read said Radish is a horrible character for laughing about that massacre, which you kind of would agree with. This guy killed 16 people and wounded many more, shooting them from the college tower, campus tower. The events were made into a made-for-TV movie in 1975 starring Kurt Russell called The Deadly Tower, which I haven't seen. The assistant director was Charles Reynolds, and he was the director on Day of Judgment, the aforementioned slasher classic with religious over undertones. I say unbelievably in a nice way, because the film is quite low key and wasn't a big release in my opinion, but it got a novelization as well as a full soundtrack album.
I've got that. I couldn't find it. I've put it somewhere and I couldn't, because I've spoken about it before on the podcast.
I have it too, yeah.
Have you read it?
I have read it. Yes, I did read it, but a long time ago. But I think we mentioned about she has an owl, doesn't she? In mm-hmm. her friend the owl. In the
she has
book.
A friend the owl.
Yeah. Do you remember Meep? She has a friend up in the tower. She talks.
She does.
To an owl.
Yes, which makes that whole thing in the bell tower make more sense. Why she's always in the bell tower. Yep.
Mm. Oh, it's an actual owl.
Yes, it's an actual owl.
All right. Yeah. I thought it was just a guy who was called the owl. It was his nickname or something.
No, she has an actual... I can't remember the exact context, but she has an owl that she talks to in the... And I think the book starts with her talking into the owl. But I don't remember if there's any other... I couldn't find, because I've got the... So I've got the album, and I've got like a press sheet, which hasn't got... It's just got little ads on it. But I do have the novelization somewhere, and I was looking for it today, and I couldn't find it. It wasn't with all my others. So I can't remember if there's any other changes to the book. Do you remember Meep? Was there anything?
I remember the ending being a little bit different. I can't remember the specifics of it, but I remember the ending not quite going that way. I mean, it does end in the bell tower, but I think something else happens. I can't remember exactly. It does give a little bit more information about the killer, if I remember correctly. Mm. Something about him being married, having a personal life a little bit. But doesn't go into the specifics of his life too much, other than he was this guy who was married, and we don't know why he's actually killing people, though.
Mm. Well, speaking of the killer, he's played by Timothy Rayner, who I interviewed for History Lives way back when, and he told me that they filmed it in September, October 1979, but I think he's a year out. I think it was filmed September, October 1980, because on one of the interviews, or one of the audio commentaries on one of the DVDs I have, Cecile Baghdadi says that every time one of the cast members used to leave after their scenes of their death were filmed, they would sing Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. And that song actually wasn't released until September 1980. So that would probably date the film to that era. Mm. So I know that, Justin, you've mentioned that in your book, it says 1979 based on probably that interview with Timothy Rayner. So apologies.
Oh, well, I'll change it if I ever gets a reprint. Yes, I think you're probably right now. Yeah.
Oops. Sorry. I accidentally kicked my microphone. That's it for me.
Okay, well, thank you. Got a couple reviews from the film. I'm just going to read a little bit, and this is from, I don't know which film, the Daily Herald, and it says, Final Exam is one of the best slash movies I've ever seen. No, it doesn't say that at all. It actually says final exam.
I was thinking, was that written by Nathan Johnson?
No, it says final exam. The headline is "Exam is brutally bad, sick, and stupid," and it's given no stars at all. And it says, in keeping with my new anti-maniac movie policy announced last week, Final Exam, a mindless imitation of every preceding mass murder movie, gets no stars and no recommendations for anything except the nearest garbage dumper. Dumpster. The only thing good about Final Exam. Yeah, is that it's bound to kill off the interest in the maniac genre very quickly. It's so stupid. And then it just goes on to say, I won't read all of it, but it's here we go again. Another unidentified, super strong loony armed with a butcher knife killing off sexually promiscuous and obnoxious teenagers at a small town, Lanier College in North Carolina. Actually, by the time the last girl is stalked in the campus tower, the nameless killer has wiped out the entire campus population remaining on the last day of term. And then he closes, there's more of the review, but then he closes and says, again, sort of telling you how it is, he says, Final Exam and the other maniac movies are cinematic slime, not solely because of the equating illicit sex with violent mutilation, and not solely because they treat people like animals at a butcher shop. They're all retreads of the same flat genre, and that's the worst tragedy of this junk, money and time being spent on something that's already been done and done and done. So and he just says, message to film. Oh, I know.
You can say the same thing about anything from the 80s. Oh, God, yeah. The echo's back.
Yeah.
Oh, but he just says a message to the filmmakers working on the maniac movie or planning one in the near future. Stop. Please stop. Stop. Just stop. And this goes, for the summer, we'll have to bear down, though. Graduation Day and Screamers are coming. As for the latter film, a monster movie, carry a warning, you'll actually see a man turned inside out. Gee, I can hardly wait. So I think it's just worth putting it into context of what the critics were talking about at the time. There's another, I've just got another review here, and this is from the Syracuse Herald from Tuesday, May the 12th, 1981, by Joan E. Vanderbonker. Vanderbonker, that's a strange name. But
Vanderbonker.
Well, it's Vanderbonker, but anyway, so it sounds French. She says it's a definite F for flunked for Final Exam, purported to be a horror film, but a movie with about two scares and it's 90 minute running time. It also actually identifies, say, probably Animal House are responsible for the silliness at the frat house. She's kind of. It's again, it's not a glowing review, but interestingly, this piece I've got here, it's actually got like a little article on Mother's Day, which is just about to come out, and also the ads below it got Friday 13th Part 2 and all the good stuff that was happening at the time. So that was good. A couple of other little minor things I saw. One of the things I'd never noticed before, and it's not particularly exciting at all, but I just thought I got a kick out of it. It was a little in-joke in the movie, was that the license plate of the van that's used in the prank starts with MPM, which is the stands for Motion Picture Marketing, which is the company that made the movie. So they were just doing a little in-joke there. Not that it's very funny, but it was a little in-joke all the same. yes, I know, hilarious. The other things that I don't know if we've mentioned, but they get mentioned in the probably on the Blu-ray. I don't know if the Blu-ray's got any more features compared to the DVD we've got from Scorpion Releasing. But Joel Rowley, what's his name? Joel
Rice.
Rice. That's it. So I was going to say Rice. Yeah, Rice was saying that. That when they filmed, did you, Daniel, mention that when they filmed, he filmed the phone scene, he managed to break the phone in the first take.
Oh, no, and then had yes, to go I out. About this, yeah.
Yeah, and then the crew had to go out and steal. Sounds like they went out and stole.
Yeah, that's what it says. They went out and stole a phone from a garage that closed for the night.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that was kind of, but it just goes to show sort of how these kind of these are literally kind of like little guerrilla movie making. There was a scene with the guy when Wildman's, in your interview you probably said this, but when Wildman was killed, that it nearly ended up with him being killed for real, didn't it? Because the weightlifting equipment actually kind of did go round his neck and caused him to go unconscious. So the killer actually ironically saved his intended victim in real life, and then he killed him on screen.
Although Ralph Brown, who plays Wildman, doesn't have any more IMDb credits, so did he live?
Maybe he didn't. Maybe he passed out from the hairspray, perhaps.
Timothy L. Rayner, who played the killer, he's also the fight coordinator, so he should have been a little more careful.
Yes, no, indeed. So, that's kind of the background, I think, for this movie. There's quite a lot more, if you look on IMDb, stuff that's kind of taken from various interviews and things like that, so it's worth looking. But from the interviews on the Scorpion releasing DVD, it sounds like they had a blast making the film. So, and we had fun watching it. So thank you for listening to that. And after this, we'll be back and tell you what we're going to be covering next time. And I don't know if we've got any feedback. We've probably got some people talking about Final Exam, so we'll come back after. We'll let you know how to get in touch.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, Facebook time.
I was just going to say, please do get in contact with the show. But Joseph, you're going to give us some Facebook feedback, aren't you?
Yeah, I should also mention, you can now find us on YouTube by searching for The Hysteria Continues.
Yes, and thank you for doing that, Joseph. Yes, so.
Yeah, anyway, Jenny Hall Cameron says about Final Exam, I remember Radish and such. And I just let a car pass. Sorry for the gap there. I remember Radish and such, but wasn't this the one that in the beginning they had a fake out of a school shooting or something? And that's what Jenny said. So not so much
indeed
commenting,
yes,
but asking a question.
Yes.
Anyway.
And the answer is yes, it is the one.
Yes. I already answered her on the thing, but anyway. Dave Rendon says, lame. Clearly remember having the box in my hand at a local major video, but never rented it. Interested to see what the Four Horsemen of Horror have to say. Yeah, me too. Whoever they are.
Yeah, whoever they are. Yes.
Drew Russell says, I love this movie. It's like Slasher 101. Nothing terribly original. Everything you'd expect, but done pretty well. At times, it feels like a TV movie, especially with the dialogue, amateurish acting, and a musical score that sounds like it was taken from a 1970s sitcom or after-school special PSA. But I think that all adds to the charm. The characters are all likable. Sans Wildman. Yeah, I like Wildman. And a lot of the deaths are surprisingly vicious compared to the inoffensive material that preceded it. I also love Radish, the effeminate lover of all things macabre, referencing serial killers, horror movies, and talking about the recent murders with Giddy Revere. Years before Randy and Scream, sure, it has its flaws, but this is one of my comfort horror movies. Is it the best of the early 80s slashers? Certainly not. But I'd watch this over Rob Zombie's Halloween, Hostel, or Friday the 13th Part 5 any day. And I agree with him except for that last part. Friday the 13th Part 5, just no, you can't. You just can't.
I know somebody who doesn't like Friday the 13th Part 5 who's on this podcast. Me?
Who is it?
Me?
Explain yourself. You don't like Friday the 13th Part 5. I've been listening to your podcast.
I'm the one who goes up and down with it. Like, I love certain elements of it, and other things I get really annoyed by it. But certain characters in the movie with certain assets, I fully appreciate.
The ladies with the big bazongas.
Maybe.
Continue, Joseph.
Declan Gallagher says, or Declan Gallagher, his name is backwards on Facebook for some reason, says, this is one of my most watched slasher movies, even though I'm not too crazy about it. Something about it is very comforting, though. And as Eric might say, it has that certain je ne sais quoi that most slasher movies of the time era do. It could use a higher body count, but I do think the killer is quite a threatening presence, and I appreciate the lack of backstory. That was from Declan Gallagher. Let's see who's next. Ben Schur.
Oh,
yay. It's Ben Schur.
Speak of the devil.
Yeah, he says, I love this movie. Lots of character development. My favorite thing about it is that, unlike some college horror films, it actually takes advantage of college-specific locales in its fright scenes, like the cafeteria. Such fun.
I said speak of the devil there because we were talking about Ben Schur in the break. I just realized we weren't actually speaking about him on air as such. Yeah. It was all good, though, Ben. Don't worry.
You and ruined it, Eric.
Ben would refer to this movie as a relaxing slasher movie.
Yes.
Which I like that. I like that term. I like the relaxing slasher movies of the 80s like this.
It's a relaxer, relaxer, slasher, relaxer. Yeah.
Trademark it, Ben.
Yeah. Bob Hartshorn says, final exams, exterior may be bright and cheery and feature a chorus line of likable, well-drawn characters. Final Girl Courtney, Deodorant Breath, Wild Man, and the Mighty Radish being obvious standouts. But be warned, the clean and tidy aesthetic masks some pretty nifty, sharp edges. The thought of a nameless homicidal maniac from nowhere showing up to slaughter high school kids with no motivation other than why not is pretty chilling in my book. There's not a lot of blood spillage going on, but it's well compensated for in the shape of decent suspense and well-executed set pieces. The campus tower finale in particular hits the spot, especially when our combat-coated killer gets the chance to exploit his arrow-catching skills to their full potential. This superhuman trait is almost as impressive as his uncanny ability of shoehorning his murder victims upside down on their heads into changing room lockers.
That's true. I'm getting them to the arses sticking out, too.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to say. Can I just say I love that moment where he catches the bow? It's really cool.
It is really cool, yeah.
Apparently he really did it, too, which is really awesome.
It looked like he really actually did it, yeah. The movie's ace trump for me, however, has to be the shooting kidnap gag during that exam. Sure, it justifies its purpose as a cry wolf catalyst for the spoiler, untimely, undeserved demise of amateur criminologist Radish. But the sheer audacity of using something as volatile as a bogus gun massacre for comedic effect is nothing short of 24-karat bad taste genius. I bet John Waters wish he'd thought of that one. Top of the class, A+. That was Bob Hartshorn. Let's see who's next. Couple more here. Asia Raimi says, when you see a list of favorite slasher films of the 80s, very rarely do you see it on any of those lists. Final Exam is just a good old slasher. Nothing fancy. It really deserves more fans than it has. Michael Lake says, this movie feels like a weird hybrid between Porky's and an 80s slasher movie. I love it. Mikey Faulkner says, a tad bland, but worth watching just for Queen Radish. Jay Parkins says, Final Exam is as by the book as slashers go, but it's hugely underrated. And finally, Estelle Phillips says, any film with Radish and Wild Man is a favorite of mine. Heart, with an arrow through it.
Ooh.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone who wrote in. So that we haven't got any other feedback, because we're recording this in advance. So it's not that you don't love us and you don't want to write anything in. But we don't take it to heart, do we, Eric?
No.
No. You see, Eric does take it to heart, and Eric's very sensitive. He's very sensitive.
Yeah.
So
I have a joke of the week, by the way.
Oh, you do?
Okay.
Are we ready for this?
Play the jingle.
Yeah.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic. So, I was there trying to remember the name of the lead actress in Final Exam. So, I racked my brains and realized it was Cecile Bagdad-E. I racked my brains.
Oh.
I don't get it.
Iraq, Baghdad.
Baghdad's the capital of Iraq.
Oh, okay.
It's funny now. Yeah,
I get it now. It is fairly clever.
He gets a bell tower. Yeah, he got a bell tower.
Yeah. You did get a bell tower.
Like final exam.
Do you get an owl too?
Well, that's very good, Eric. It doesn't sound at all like you made that up on the spot. But yeah. Thank you for that. I think you're going the extra mile.
Joke factory.
Exactly. Finally.
I missed the joke of the weeks. You should always have a joke of the week, Eric.
Yeah. You can just make them up.
You're the funny man of the show.
Yeah.
No one else is funny. No one else is funny. We're all deadly serious, and you make us laugh.
Yeah, we're straight men, Eric. And you're not.
I'm scared now.
Joseph, do you want to be alone with Eric for a while?
Yes.
In a locker, probably?
Yeah, my arse.
I think we're alone now. Do you think you could fit in that locker, Eric?
Yeah. What do you think? No, we have no chance.
Maybe the barrel. What about the barrel? You fit in the barrel, Eric?
Eric
was the barrel.
Hey,
Eric was the barrel.
See what I have to put up with.
I know.
You're being bullied.
Yes. Enough of Eric's trigger warnings. Let's move on, and say thank you very much for listening, and also an extra special thank you to Meep, aka Michael J. Ferrari. And where can we hear you next? Where can people hear more of you?
You could find me, the podcast, on RetroMovieLove.com or on iTunes. And you could stalk me on Facebook, Michael Ferrari.
And when is your next episode coming
out? Well, we should be recording it next week, and it's going to be a horror one. So fans of this podcast may want to listen.
Yeah.
It's not slasher-related, but it is horror-related.
But there's always some horror-related content on your show, regardless of what the topic is usually.
Yeah, usually we delve into horror just a little bit because we love horror so much. But we focus on movies from the 70s and 80s. So, and there's a lot of horror movies in there. So
there is,
yeah, excellent.
But
well,
I would like to say, Shades of Watergate.
Oh, yes.
Classic Radish.
Indeed.
Yeah. I love you, Radish. Radish forever. He's still alive in my heart.
Yeah. Excellent.
I think it was a dream.
And what?
Oh, no.
Oh, God, no.
Here we go. Oh. It's Alice from Friday the 13th all over again.
Oh, dear.
She just had a crazy, like, dream in the middle of her chase scene.
Yes.
So, okay. Well, thank you for listening. And next time, Eric, it's your pick of the listener picks, isn't it? So,
what are you going to plug? So, I've had a look at the list that Joseph has sent me, and I am going to go with, I think I mentioned this last week on the podcast, The Boogeyman from 1980.
Oh, I'll finally get to see that one then.
Have you not seen it before?
No, I've never seen The Boogeyman.
I think you will like it.
Of course you will.
Yeah, excellent.
He likes everything.
Yeah.
Well, unless he's like Mikey.
He's like that cereal kid. He'll eat anything. He'll watch anything.
It's a Michael Alishan pick. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that should be an interesting one. So again, back to the early 80s with a bang. So we'll look forward to seeing that. And anything else we want to say before we say goodbye to the good people? Or just say goodbye to the good people?
I think we just say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye to the good people.
No more teachers, dirty looks.
It's like the Brady. It's like the Brady Bunch, isn't it?
Ouch. Echo. Now it's gone.
Now it's gone.
You asshole. Skype's an asshole.
Buggering, cunting Echo.
And I said, Michael. Yeah, right. More like Finkel.
He did a little bit. His hair was like a curtain, wasn't it? Like a cross between a curtain and like a bell end, like a penis.
It kind of was a bell end, yeah.
Do you have bell ends in the States, apart from Trump, of course?